what's up, everyone, and welcome to episode 50 of Buzzer Beaters. This is a milestone episode, as we've been talking about in the last couple of weeks, and we do have a special guest lined up for you. But before we introduce him, let's go get through the other stuff, all right? So I'm Eddie Aparicio. This is Anthony Tuan Corral. We're also known as the Cisco Kids, and we are a NBA-dedicated podcast brought to you by GremlingsMedia.com. You can find us at GremlingsMedia.com, as well as any other popular podcast outlet you can think of, such as YouTube, Facebook, Spotify, X, Rumble, you name it, Pandora. You can find us, whatever suits you, just go ahead and just type in Gremlings Media, and then you can go ahead and find us. So, as I've mentioned, this is a special episode, because this is our 50th episode, and it's a milestone, right? So we're almost getting to our age, like Tuan has been saying for the last couple of weeks. We're almost there, but we're not there.
We're not quite there yet, man.
But anyway, even though we are dedicated to basketball, sometimes we'll go ahead and dibble and dabble in other sports, right? Mainly, you know, we go into the NCAA tournament, which is still basketball. We still talk about WNBA every now and then. But once in a great while, we'll talk about other sports like football. So for this episode, I'm bringing in one of my friends that we'll go ahead and talk how we met and so forth. But this person has been – he played in the NFL, and I'm going to give you some of his accolades. So he's a UCLA Hall of Fame wide receiver, holds school records still to this day for receiving touchdowns in a season with 17, receiving touchdowns for a career in 28 touchdowns, and then receiving yards in the game – dude, 263 yards in a game. That's, like, ridiculous.
That's pretty nuts.
And then receptions in a game with 14. That's legit, right? So he played nine seasons in the NFL with the San Francisco 49ers mainly, and then also went to Jacksonville Jaguars as well as the New England Patriots. Also has a Super Bowl ring. I've seen it. He retired in 2003. He had 342 receptions and 4,293 yards and 30 touchdowns. So before I go ahead and introduce him, for those of you who are about, I would say, 42 years old and older, probably have seen him play, probably may have played in fantasy football leagues that maybe drafted him. But if you're any younger than that, you may have to go ahead and search up about who this person is. So, but before I go ahead and...
You're aging us, Eddie.
I know. Cut it out, bro. We're not there yet. But what I want to do is show this little clip. Because for those of you who are a little younger than the days that I told you, about 42, you're definitely going to know this player. So I'm going to go ahead and share that right now, a little interview that you see here, and I'm going to go ahead and press play.
Now I'm here with Davante Adams, wide receiver for the Las Vegas Raiders. He's got 95 receptions for 1,443 yards. He's got 14 touchdowns, and he averages 15 yards per catch. Man, it's an honor and a privilege to meet you today.
Pleased to meet you, man.
So one of my greatest memories of my life is going to your camp and doing a 7-on-7 against you.
Yes, sir.
So what is one of your greatest memories in your childhood?
Greatest memories in my childhood, I would say when I was young, maybe about 7 or 8 years old, I had an opportunity to meet J.J. Stokes, who was on the San Francisco 49ers at the time. And that memory stuck with me because I was the first professional athlete that I met, and it was just a great experience. Really nice guy. He helped out all the young kids and gave us great advice. So I probably have to say that.
Now, that is cool, man. That is really cool. So without any further delay, I am going to go ahead and bring in none other than my friend J.J. Stokes. JJ, what is up?
What's up, man?
Love your shirt, man.
Happy to be on and enjoy you guys in this 50th.
Thank you.
Thanks for being a part of it, man, because I know how busy your schedule is, man. I know, dude, when you describe what you've been doing in the last week or two, I was exhausted just hearing the story, man, of how much you've been doing, man. So this is your normal life, man, and I get it, man. So you have a family of two, along with the wife, and, you know, your kids – definitely take up a lot of your time. I know you're essentially a soccer dad and a basketball dad, right?
Basketball, soccer, and baseball's creeping into it right now. So it's fun. It's time consuming, but I love it. In addition, I still coach at Bishop O'Dowd High School, so I get a lot of work in, a lot of fun in, and is still able to work with some kids. So that's the fantastic part.
Right, you're supposed to be retired, man. That's one of the perks.
This is retired. It doesn't get better than that. I don't sit around too much. I'm up early and getting after it and just trying to. I have an 8-year-old, so I got to move around because at some point, you know, it's coming. He's going to challenge dad, so it's coming.
Yep.
Hey, JJ, I got to say, first and foremost, man, congratulations on Jayla getting accepted to the University of Buffalo. It sounds like that's where she's going to end up going, right?
Well, that's one offer she's got. She's got several offers right now, and right now she's just working her tail off. This week is finals, so this is our last week of school before she'll be a senior. So she is just trying to maintain that 4.1, 4.2 GPA at her high school. So that's been a blessing that she's studied so hard and is on the right path academically. And more importantly, she still loves the sport of basketball, and she's working her tail off for that, too.
Good for you, man. That's awesome, man. That's cool.
You know, the UCLA Bruins have a pretty good basketball program, from what I understand. No wishes to follow dad there?
You know, I think we've brainwashed our daughter from the time she was little, going to all the UCLA events, football and basketball, women's and men's. And so, like, that's her dream school. But, you know, at the same time, you have to understand they have to want you as much as you want them.
That
works in front of them so that they deem her worthy enough to play for a school like that.
Yeah.
Right. And then your kid, man, I've seen some videos of him. That dude's got some wheels, man. I mean, and he's huge. He towers over everybody, man. He's got you on that front.
He's a foot taller than everybody in his class. He's a second grader right now. And it's funny because I see him come out of class and I'm looking at the kids and you look up and he's so much taller. But, yeah, he's loving soccer. He's loving baseball. Football, not so much.
Not so much.
And I'm okay with that, you know, as a dad. But, you know, if he chooses to go that route, I'll be ready to show him.
Nice. So that's a good segue, JJ, because I think, you know, the audience would definitely like to know a little bit more about your background, right? You know, as far as where you're from, you know, what sports you played when you were growing up, you know, how you ultimately made the decision to play football, you know, professionally, you know, that whole journey. It would be great if you can kind of give us, you know, kind of a Reader's Digest version of your upbringing, where you grew up, high school career, college career, how you got into the pros and so forth. That would be a great story to tell.
Well, I grew up in Southern California in San Diego. We ended up there because my dad was in the Navy. My mom is from Decatur, Georgia. My dad is from Fort Lauderdale. My mom's side moved over to my dad's side. Navy brought him to San Diego. I have three older brothers, all in the sports at a young age. And so I'm the youngest by 10 years. So I had the benefit of watching, seeing, and them working with me. But yeah, I played football, basketball, and baseball. Those were the main sports you play as a kid growing up in Southern California and in San Diego. And so just played youth league at my age. And I was always the bigger kid. I always had to bring my birth certificate so they realized I'm the same age as all the other kids. You know how that is. And then, you know, the thing that I tell my receivers and the kids where I coach, I'm like, look, I didn't get here by sheer chance, you know. I have three older brothers that I actually listen to because you know how it is listening to older brothers, sisters, or even parents at times. I listened. So I was working. I would go work out with my brothers, and they were up at 6 a.m. working out at high school. I'd be there with them running the tracks on the grass. So I did a lot of stuff that nobody saw, but it was work being put in for ultimately – you know, I didn't know it was going to be football because my first love is basketball, and I'm 6'6".
Yeah.
My first love is basketball, but it turned out to be football. And it only did that because the Power Five schools were after me for football, and the one school in Southern California that wanted me in basketball, and it was a light one. It was UC Santa Barbara wanted me. The coach, my basketball coach, were talking for a minute, and I was like, you know what, it doesn't – for me, I can go to a UCLA, which is a big-time school.
Big time.
Or I can go to UC Santa Barbara. And at the time, no slight on Santa Barbara, they did have Brian Shaw at the time that came out of there. So I was aware of that. But UCLA had, like, hundreds of people coming out for football. So I made that choice simply just on that kind of aspect. Both of them good quality UC systems, so I just decided to go football instead of basketball.
And did you have a scholarship for both of those sports?
So they were yet to offer me at Santa Barbara, but we were in the talks about doing that at the time. And I didn't wait to see.
So gotcha. Okay.
My head coach, Coach Eros, was talking with their head coach. And I was like, you know what? I got an offer on the table as opposed to something that's going to be down the line, because you typically sign right after your season. At least that was the case when I was in school. Nowadays, it's completely different. But, you know, it was right after football season, and it was in the midst of basketball season. So it wasn't like I was going to wait, because right. I wanted to take an opportunity that was on the table as one that might come.
Gotcha. Now, relatively speaking, versus the other kids in your class, like from, you know, in high school, relatively speaking, were you better than everybody else in basketball, or like relatively speaking, more so than football, or is it more football than everybody else, you know, from the football front, you know? So I just wanted to.
Honestly, I can say this. You'd be amazed at the class of the people that I went to school with. So my junior and senior year, if I had to run off all the guys, we had a guy get our defensive end went to Washington, our O-lineman went to Washington State, our quarterback went to Penn State, our other receiver went to Cal, our running back went to San Diego State.
Wow.
Like we had 17 guys go in football. And then basketball, we had I gotta think of his name, Bo. I forget Bo's last name. He was a 6'7" wing, could shoot he was shooting threes before threes were into us, right?
Right.
Everything was about going to the basket and showing your dominance with aggressiveness. And then we had a six. And when I was playing, we had a 6'10 center. So, like, I was, like, just the 6'6 guy, barely tall enough. But I played the shooting guard, and then my senior year, I played the point guard. So, like, it just varied. We had a lot of talent. Point Loma High School was, and it still is, they have a lot of talent coming through there. Sometimes it's local, sometimes it's bust in like myself. But a lot of guys bust in, and we made the most of it.
Man, so you were a 6'6 point guard, man.
Yep, 6'6. I grew an inch in college. I was 6'5 in high school.
Okay. Still, that's legit, man. If you're playing point guard at that size, you know, where I went to high school, you'd be playing center, man.
Yeah, you would have.
Without a doubt, yeah, man.
We had a 6'10 center and a 6'7 wing, so that's it's crazy. Like, no, I'm good.
Oh, so, JJ, were you a shooter? Were you an outside guy, a D guy?
I did baseball, basketball, football, but once I got to high school, my brothers convinced me to run track. So I was a high jumper and a hurdler. So I was a 6'11 high jumper in high school. So I used to go to the basket and try to break down the rim on whomever was in my way at the time.
Yeah.
So that was the thing, though. That's what everybody wanted to do. You know, like I look at Anthony Edwards. He's that to me right now. He's going to go to the basket. And if you're in his way, you're going to feel the wrath.
Yep.
That's how we played the game, more like his game, as opposed to the current game, which is, you know, everybody's trying, three is better than two, right?
Right. Yep. Right.
Well, inside out.
Yep.
So JJ, so I met some of JJ's friends, you know, and we've been keeping in touch over the years, all hoop heads, right?
Yep.
But they used to play in an adult basketball league out here in the East Bay. So you went to my 50th birthday party, Tuan. Yes. So the DJ as well as the MC were both playing basketball with JJ in the league, right? And you know, I don't know who told me, if it was James or Rick here, and hopefully they're on here listening, because I invited them to potentially participate here, and hopefully they had found the time to get on here. But, and by the way, we're live, so if you have any questions for JJ or any of us, please feel free to type them in. But I forgot who told me, if it was James or Bakir. Because I asked, I'm like, so hey, how's JJ as a ball player, man? And they're like, dude, he's a beast, man. He was a beast of a basketball player. He could have easily played, you know, in college. So, and then, you know, of course, you know, I'll let you describe what happened.
Well, yeah, so that was fun. They convinced me to play in an adult league. And, of course, it's the first game we play in. And I go to the gym. I work out. I'm on the treadmill. I lift weights. And occasionally I'll shoot around, but first time running, didn't do a lot of preparation for it. Running up and down the court, second half, I want to say early in the third quarter of the first game, I spill the ball, I'm running down, and I wouldn't say I Euro-stepped, I just took a big long step, and I felt like somebody hit me on my shoulder, but what my teammate said, nobody hit me, and I tore my patella tendon in the first game of the third quarter. And so, ultimately, in the first game, like we were smoking too, so it was fun. I enjoyed it. I've been playing pickup basketball for so long and hadn't played in a couple of years, but then getting back into it. And in the third quarter, I tore my patella tendon, ended up having surgery, and I can't say I completely stopped because my daughter it plays high level basketball in high school, so I take her to the gym and work with her when she's not training. With her trainers or with her team. So, yeah, I'm still there. I just don't move as swiftly as I used to.
Yeah,
I
heard you guys father time. Father time.
And people being 50, 42 or more. I'm 52, so, yeah, that was about the right time. They have to Google me now, y'all.
That's funny. That is
yeah,
funny.
You know, so let me ask you this. So in college when you were playing football, I'm sure you definitely played some basketball at that time.
Yeah.
I'm sure you did, right? Whether it be intramurals. I remember my brother-in-law, Mike, who went to UCLA at the same time that you were there. He said that he saw you play pickup games at UCLA, you know, some of the players even that were on UCLA basketball team. He said he saw you play a few times with those guys. Could you have played for UCLA?
So that's interesting that you asked. So what happened when I was at UCLA, I told UCLA, if I'm going to go football, I actually want to play, try out for the basketball team too. The one school that was going to let me do that, Cal would have let me play football and basketball, so they say. So I still ended up picking UCLA. So after my first year, they said, get your grades, make sure your grades, because it's an adjustment from high school to college. And everybody understands that with the grades and the independence and just being on time, being where you're supposed to be, all those good things. But my second year, I did try to walk on at UCLA and was practicing with the team for a good few weeks under Jim Herrick. And I got a call into the office. I got a call into the office because I think there was a good chance that I would have probably sat the bench just straight up. There's no question about it. I would have sat the bench. But I got a call in the office and it was, look, we see your progress on the football field and we understand that we said we could do this, but we think it's in your best interest scholarship-wise to stay with football. After 2 weeks of practicing and doing stuff with the UCLA men's team, I felt like I said, I would have been the last person on the bench. But I think I could have done that and I would have been okay with that, getting like the last few minutes of a game. I ultimately wanted to do that, they shut that down, and I remember Jim Herrick calling me into the office and telling me that. And then I had to go meet with Terry Donahue, who was my coach at the time, and he just let me know that, you know what, we're not going to go forward with that. If you do, then we have to think about what your other options are.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So. But that was your freshman year, correct?
No, so that was my sophomore year because they wanted me to have a good adjustment year as far as school and sports and training and all those kind of things. So
yeah,
I redshirted my first year, so it would have been my redshirt freshman year that this happened.
Okay, and if I don't know if I have the years right, but Tony Gonzalez played for Cal and he played both basketball and football. So I don't.
Yes.
Was that around the same time you were there?
He's a little younger than me, but I had this conversation with him. As we, like being up here and all the Cal people here in Northern California, we've crossed heads. So I've met Tony, talked to Tony, and let him know that was the one reason why I considered UCLA and Cal as an opportunity to go to school. And apparently he's a better decision maker than I am.
I don't know, but yeah. Hey, you know, I wanted to ask you from a passion perspective, how hard was it to kind of give up on hoops? Like just from a love of the sport type of perspective.
So I fell in love with hoops at a young age, football and hoops at the same time, at about 7 years old. And both of them, my oldest brother, who Daryl Stokes, who won the CIF championship MVP his senior year in high school, and ended up playing football for Long Beach State. But he was influencing me to, like, he didn't have to say much. What he did influence me to really, I love the basketball probably more than I loved football. And then I tell people at the skill position that are tall and thin that you see in the NFL, they tried for the NBA to play in college. It just didn't work out for them. And so okay. I think, and especially in my case, that was it. But yeah, basketball was my first love. Football was a truly close second. But yeah, just influenced by my brother, basketball was probably more of my first love.
So yeah. out of your other brothers, who's the best basketball player amongst you three?
For us three, my oldest brother Daryl is. My oldest brother Daryl's. Okay. He and I are the only two that actually played basketball. My other two were strictly football and track.
Okay.
Yes.
Now Daryl is the one that I think I met at your house, and he calls you Money, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Like Money. What? That's a nickname.
He's the one that got me.
Exactly.
Yeah. And we still to this day say that. We still call each
other Money. That's hilarious. All right. So now, you know, we want to get to basketball element because we're a basketball podcast.
Yes.
We'll talk a little bit more about basketball, but it's all about you. We want to know more about you. So when you were at UCLA, when did you know that you were potentially going to go pro? And maybe explain that process of how that kind of happened.
You know, that was actually, I didn't know until I'd say, well, I got the inkling probably the end of my sophomore year. So my freshman year, I redshirted.
Okay.
And my second year, so my redshirt freshman year, and I told my daughter about this, about being patient. I caught 5 passes for 55 yards, and that was my whole freshman year. Today, if I had that, I would have transferred somewhere.
Right.
Well, there you go. Where's the portal?
I'm like, okay, that was my first year. Let me build on it. So my sophomore year, what ends up happening is I'm behind a consensus All-American at receiver, and he's from Sacramento up here in the Bay, Sean LaChapelle. Fantastic guy. He worked with us, and he worked with all the young guys. Some guys didn't do that when my true freshman year. They didn't work with the young guys, but he was a true like pro. He would work with us, work on our footwork, work stuff like that. So I was behind him the entire year, my second year, and I think I caught maybe 30 balls that year. But what ended up happening is he was a consensus All-American, and we were playing the University of Arizona in Arizona, and he went across the middle and got hit in the ribs. And at the time, we didn't know it, but we found out he cracked a rib.
Okay.
So I come in that game, nothing happens. And then the game after that, I'm starting at the X position for UCLA, and we're playing in Oregon at the old Opsen Stadium, and it was a barn burner. 3-3 And so with 2 minutes left in the game, Wayne Cook goes back to pass, throws me, I want to say 30 to 40 yard touchdown pass. So we go up 6-3 and we end up winning that game. And so that kind of, like, the coaches were like, he can do it. Cause I think that game I had over 100 yards receiving, and we go into my final game at USC, and I realized how big it was because of the bonfires, because of all the things they did the week, Spirit Week, playing USC, crosstown rival, all of that good stuff. Everybody gets up and speaks, and they trash our school, and apparently we go and trash their school at the same time. And so that helped me know, like, the magnitude of this game. But even then, I didn't anticipate anything. I just went in and played. And that was the game I caught 6 grabs for 263 yards and 3 touchdowns. And I remember that game like it was yesterday, because we had the third string quarterback, but he's a starter anywhere else. And he's a true starter. And he lives here in the Bay Area, across the Bay, John Barnes. And he, for whatever reason, I can't explain it, he enjoyed throwing to the weak side. And maybe it was because I had isolated coverage and he felt comfortable with the one-on-ones. And so he got me the ball. And as long as I keep making things happen, things were going to keep coming. And so I broke the school record in doing that. And I still remember to this day after the game, I'm going in, I'm getting dressed, and they're like, you got to go, because they had an interview room and all this stuff. And I'm like, you know me, Eddie. I'm pretty reserved. I'm real chill.
Yeah.
So they were like, yeah, you got to go. I'm like, man, I don't want to do that. And they were like, no, we're not asking you.
You just got to do it.
The school record and beat USC. So,
yep.
So then it really let me know what had happened once that happened. And that kind of the rest is history. My junior year took off where I became a consensus All-American. But all that did was inspire me to keep working. And that's one thing I try to get my kids to do. I'm like, look, you guys, regardless of what is being said, what's being done, work. You got to work. Just keep working on your craft, working on your craft. You don't know when it's going to kick in, but it's going to kick in. And so that's kind of how I operated, because that's all I had is my faith and belief that I can make it happen and the work to put in. My dad being a military guy, we put in work. That's what our family does.
Right.
Awesome. You know, I wanted to ask you, because earlier you had mentioned, you know, you played three sports growing up. You know, nowadays you have two young children. You know, a lot of times they focus on one sport all year round.
Right.
And I'm curious, from your perspective, like, how good did it make you a football player, the fact that you were able to play basketball and baseball and these other sports? How do you feel that contributed? And do you think it's hindering some of the younger players now that they don't really work other muscles or work other type of reflexes or things of that nature?
See, I'm from the old school where I'm a proponent of that, playing multiple sports and not doing something year-round. If you're physically being active, and here's the thing, even if it's basketball season and you're doing some footwork for football, footwork is all, it's football, basketball, baseball, track, any
footwork.
Footwork translates all the way through. So that's irrelevant for me. I think that translates in no matter what sport you play. So, like, I think it's a huge help, a huge assistance. And at any given point, no kid is going to completely leave. If they play multiple sports, leave that sport alone. They're going to be doing something, whether it's with their parents, whether it's with a trainer, whether it's – and then continue to do the sports. So I'm a proponent of that because, one, you know, you read all the studies, and I do read about – multiple sports and how it lessens the injury factor for kids. And and they say that the kids that do one sport all the way up usually tend to have a tendency to get injured earlier than those kids that do multiple sports. So I'm a big proponent in playing multiple sports. But today some of the coaches don't want you to do that. And that's understandable. But then you have to like my daughter at this point, she's only basketball. She did track and basketball her first year. So then we're like, okay, how can we do something to do the movements of other sports so that you're not just doing basketball movements because it's protecting you from the injury bug? And so that's the kind of way I think about it, and we continue to do stuff with my daughter and my son. Thankfully, he plays a lot of sports right now, and so we're loving that.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I feel the exact same way, which is why I ask, because, you know, it's just – I think it's great that, you know, you get to experience a lot of different sports, a lot of different things. You know, I've never played at any higher level, but for me, you know, being on different teams, playing with different sports, it each one taught me something, and you know, each team taught me something. Then dynamics are different. So, no, cool. Yeah.
So now, JJ, now you got drafted, right? This is what 1995 or 96? 96, the year after the Super Bowl, right? So you got drafted by the Niners. Now, you being from Southern California, Did you really want to go to, like, the Rams or the Chargers first rather than the Niners? And were you getting recruited or talked to possibly going to those teams instead of the Niners?
So, back to that. Yeah, so I realized my junior year when I was a consensus All-American that it was a great opportunity for me that I could play next level. After my senior year, I traveled down to L.A., to San Diego, and just so happened to watch Niners, Chargers, Raiders, Rams, those guys, because they were all down in the Bay. Growing up, my brother, my oldest brother, Darryl, and my mom were Charger fans. Me and my two other brothers, John and Jeffrey, were Raider fans. We were all Raider fans. And so, like, I didn't dream of playing anywhere, but those were the teams that I followed. Because it has more to do with Marcus Allen, probably more so, because my brother, my oldest brother, played in the championship game against Marcus Allen in high school. And, of course, Marcus Allen scores his 5 touchdowns, and they win 35-7. But my brother scored the 1 touchdown for his team in the championship game. And so, like, my brother has a tremendous amount of respect for him. And so, like, I grew up knowing that, you know, and it was made known. So I was a Marcus Allen fan, Eric Dickerson fan. And so, like, I was more a fan of the position because I played running back until I got to high school. I played running back. So, getting to that point, I was a Raider fan. And then I get drafted. I didn't care where I got drafted. I just wanted to play. In fact, I thought I was going to play for the Kansas City Chiefs because the main coach came down and talked to me and said, we're going to draft you available. So I just assumed I was going there. So I was shocked when the 49ers traded up and drafted me there. And once they drafted me, Bay Area, California, you know, I'm all in. And yep. My brother was a receiver fan. My oldest brother is a receiver, so he was a receiver fan. He used to always talk about Jerry. And so, like, I was watching him when I was in college. I mean, that's what you do. You learn. Yeah. You try to watch the games and learn and record the games and learn from what they do. And so, yeah, I was a huge Jerry fan in college because, I mean, he was the best receiver. Is, not was.
Is. He is. He is. Right? Absolutely. So, I don't think his record ever going to be broken, honestly.
No.
So, no, but that's interesting. So you were a Raider fan. Mm-hmm. And I got to say this, man. You know, me being from San Francisco, Twan's also from San Francisco. You know, being San Franciscans, you really can't like the Raiders, right?
No, I'm aware of that.
Yeah, the Raiders and the Niner fans just don't get along.
They don't get along.
And they used to be fighting all the time, you know, the fans up there. They just don't like each other. And I don't know where that stems from, but the reason I'm bringing this up is because you being a Raider fan primarily first, you probably weren't exposed to that dynamic that was up here in the Bay, right? So it didn't matter that you were getting drafted by the Niners, right?
I didn't know anything about that. And right, so then I get up here, and then everything is like, I experience it, I see it, I feel it. And we play in preseason, and you see the fights in the stands, and I'm like, man, we don't like them. And so that's the way it's going to be. But it's hard. I'm okay with it. My two brothers are like, They're Raider fans to this day. They would wear my jersey and go to the game, and I know they were just like this the whole time. But they were supporting me because I'm their brother, right?
Right.
And so I got the magnitude of it the first preseason we played them, and it's just like you see all the chaos happening. Security is at an all-time high when we play them in preseason. That's just how it is. We don't like them. They don't like us. And that's just understood.
Yep. And for a while, they banned preseason games with the Niners and the Raiders because they're like, it's too much mess.
It gets pretty crazy, especially in the parking lots.
Yeah. You know, and real quick, though, so, like, my hatred from the Raiders stems from my childhood where, you know, the Raiders were good at the time. And I had my cousins were, like, big-time obnoxious Raider fans. We're talking, like, obnoxious, right? They would take over, like, the TV, yell where they're, you know, wear the Raider jerseys and just yell, Raiders, Raiders, Raiders. And it was just so loud, and I just got tired of it. And that's the reason why I hate the Raiders. It's because of my freaking cousins, right? But everybody has a story like that, right? Yeah. But it's deep. It's, like, really deep-rooted for me, right? But I got to tell you, playing fantasy football has kind of neutralized that a little bit, right? When you follow the players, you know, and you want the players to do well for you, right? It minimizes that kind of a little bit. But I still will never like the Raiders. I never will. It's just deep-rooted with me. So, just – but anyway, I just wanted to bring that up. So let's go. Let's get into your playing career. All right. So you got drafted in 96, and then I think the second season is when you hurt your wrist, right? Yeah. And then the Niners drafted T.O. Right the following year, right? Yeah. And then you know, to me, like you there was a lot of hype, you know, for you. You the second coming of Jerry Rice because you know you're just big and you're shifty and you got great hands. And then you had this off-season injury happen to you, right? Yeah. And that kind of opened the door to me, from my perspective, for someone like him to emerge. And then once he kind of did emerge pretty quickly, then it was kind of hard for to supplant that, right? So, that's my observation. I kind of want to maybe understand, that whole process from your perspective when you had a good rookie year and then, you had a wrist injury in practice. I've seen your scar. It's a big scar, man.
Yeah.
And then from there on, what played out after that? So maybe talk about maybe your San Francisco playing career, from when it started, that wrist injury, and then from there on out,
being drafted as a rookie, excited, and just trying to assimilate to everything. First year was good. I forget how many passes, how many catches, touchdowns, but it was a solid year for a rookie guy. I was looking for huge things my second year. I forget who we were playing, but I ended up dropping two passes, and I was ticked off, right? And so we go to practice that week, and we're in practice. I want to say it was Wednesday's practice, and I dropped a few balls in practice, like the first few in team period, and so I was really like pissed, right? And so we're gonna do number one offense against number one defense, and so we're like, okay, like I'm in. So I ran a deep over route, and I go up to catch the ball, and Merton Hanks tries to deflect it, and Marquez Pope tries to deflect it. Somehow I grab the ball, and they're on top of me, but I haven't hit the ground yet. So as I'm coming down, I put my right hand on the ground, and I have my weight and their weight with me. And so I dislocated three bones in my wrist, and I couldn't move my wrist. And so then end up having surgery. That was T.O.'s first year there, and that was early on in the season. And so T.O. comes on. By the way, let me just say this. T.O., tremendous talent. You could see that when he first
for sure.
Worked hard. He was strong as an ox, and he was listening and learning and doing everything he needed to do. And so when I got hurt, he steps in, and nothing dropped. It might even elevated a little bit from the play that I had. And so I broke Jerry's rookie record, and in a few less games, T.O. broke the record that I had just broke of Jerry's the next year. And so it was at that point going into the third year, what we did was we had a three receiver offense because they were like, we got three starters and that's how we're going to operate. And that worked out for the first five games. That worked out for the first five games where I think Steve threw for 500 yards for the first three, which was a record for the 49ers at that time. I don't know if it's still standing, but and then it steadily changed, but I understood that. And so that's when it really elevated for the other two guys. And, you still got to go in there and fight for your rocks and fight for the ball and have those conversations with the quarterback's coach and with the quarterback and with your position coach to get balls thrown your way. So that's what it was from that point on. But it was I had a great time playing. We won most of the time. There's two down years, which, man, those were the toughest to swallow because I want to say we were 4-12 and 6-10, and they had never seen anything like that. And I hate that it happened while I was there because those 2 years we were down, but outside of those, we were always winning records and in the playoffs.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Any thoughts during those times to want to play for somebody else where you could get maybe more opportunities or anything like that?
That crossed my mind maybe my fourth year was that, look, you guys aren't getting me the ball as much as I'd like. The guys would call me 3rd and 10. Because if we needed 10 yards and a first down, they knew the ball was coming to me. At least, like, the linemen and the running backs, they called me 3rd and 10 because it was like, Stokes will get us first down. We know he'll be open. And so that's kind of how it was back then. And, yeah, I thought about going somewhere else. And after my fourth year, I went and spoke with the Carolina Panthers were one team, and that's where George Seifert had went to. In the lead for that. And so I considered going there. They wanted me to wait till after they signed Rocket Ishmael. You remember that name?
Oh, yeah. Rocket Ishmael.
He was on the same track too, so they wanted me to wait. I'm like, look, you wait around and you lose out, and that was not going to be the case with me. They asked me to wait for, I want to say, some ridiculous amount of time. Can you wait another 3 weeks to a month? I'm like, look, if you want me, you want me. If you don't want me, that's okay too.
So
I'm curious, JJ, you know, obviously you've had you were kind of the standout guy throughout. You had this injury. You're kind of, you know, the third. Were you hearing criticisms from the fans, from the reporters? Was that like something new to you, you know, things of that nature? Because I always like, you know, I always put myself kind of, when I see an athlete, I put myself in like a human state, right? Not an athlete state. Like, how would I deal with that? How would I, you know, because a lot of it is opportunity, injury, coaching, quarterback, you know, there's so many variables that for you to say, you know, someone's not doing this or not doing that. And I'm curious if you had experienced that type of criticism prior to
For sure I experienced the criticism, but that has no effect on my play or my preparation.
Okay.
Of course you heard it. Of course people said stuff and you hear what they're saying, whether it be we had people within the 49ers say stuff and then it got handled verbally. But when it came to the press and those kind of things, first of all, this is going to sound crazy, but did they really actually know what's going on as far as the plays being called and the reads and all those things? They don't. So for them to say whatever they said, they didn't really have a whole lot of – they had their what they saw visually, and that's what we can go by when we haven't played. But when you technically know things and you know the calls that are being made, then it's – that's what it is. And so I didn't really give it – I didn't give it a second thought about what they were saying. I could actually care less about what was being said because I never based who I was or what I did on what people thought. And what people said. I mean, if I did that, I would have been fell by the wayside in high school.
Yeah, no, good point. It just makes me think, you know, nowadays every athlete has a podcast. Every athlete's criticizing another athlete. I'm just like, I always think today, like, how that's hard, man. That's just like that's hard to deal with.
Yeah, it is. Sure. But here's the thing: it's one thing to criticize for the mistakes they made on the field. And then there's another thing, you're just going overboard and trying to be clickbait. You know what I mean? So it's a fine line, and some guys go over that line, and they do that for the views and for that. But if you're speaking facts, you can't dispute that.
Yeah,
right. So real quick, JJ, so I brought up T.O., right? And I know that you keep in touch or have kept in touch with him over the years. I think you have coached his son, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Because you are also a football coach. Yeah. So let me ask you this: is T.O. just a misunderstood individual, or what we saw is what we get from T.O.?
I think people, you have to know, I always say you have to know the individual. Like T.O. is, he's the most honest guy. And he's not politically correct.
He's unfiltered.
Yes, unfiltered. But he's politically correct sometimes, but not all the time. But he's going to give you the honest truth.
Yep.
And one thing that I always loved about him was that. He's going to tell you what he thinks, when he thinks it. And if you're not in the mood, you don't have to be in the mood. You don't have, it could be at a time where you really don't want to hear it, but it's the truth. And,
right.
And here's the thing that I always understand is, people don't want to hear the entire truth and the complete truth all the time, no matter what it is. And so they want to hear versions of the truth, but they don't want to hear the complete truth. And he's a complete truth guy, and I respect that from him.
Right. Yep. Now, let me ask you this. Is his son anything like him?
You know, it's funny because I used to call him when his son, we'd do one-on-ones, and I'd call him – it was in high school. It was amazing that he ran exactly the same as T.O. He just wasn't as physical. Like, T.O. was physical and muscular. He is thin, but how he ran his routes, how he ran in a straight line, how he come out of a cut, how he catch the ball. Everything was like T.O. And I was like, man, that's when you see like genetics. You're like, this is genetics, right? Because you can't teach to run that way. It was identical at one point. And now he's morphed into this. He is a physical specimen himself now. And so he's still trying to play at the next level in the professional ranks. And more power to him. I think he has the tools. He's strong. I've seen him in his workouts and some of the things he's done. And full supporter of Tariq.
So he's a wide receiver then, just like
yes, yes.
Okay, okay. And you were the wide receivers coach, or you still are?
Yes, I was the wide receiver.
Okay, so that begs the question now. You know, you playing the position. What would you say are the main attributes that stand out that a wide receiver should have? I mean, we know route running is very important, but like you know, and the next question I'm going to ask you after that is maybe kind of think about this as you're answering this. But I'd love to get your perspective as who, in your opinion, are the top five wide receivers of all time in the NFL. So first question, what are the attributes that you think that are important?
The things that I think are truly important are the ability to catch the ball is one. I think in order to catch the ball, you have to be able to separate from a defensive back. That's two.
Separation. Yeah.
Three, I think you have to understand the defenses to know where the spaces are. And a lot of guys don't, like even now I'm explaining, those are windows you're running through. You're running through opportunities to catch the ball and your space is closed because you went through a window and you should have slowed down in that window for the ball to get there. So understanding the defenses and playing through that.
So sort of football IQ, kind of.
Yes, basically the football IQ. The way I learned it when I got to college was from a guy named Rick Neuheisel. And he was a quarterback at UCLA, but he was our receivers coach. So he gave everything that we did through a quarterback's perspective. You don't want to run through windows. You want to come back and cut the air out of the ball. Don't drop the ball because we might not come back to you. All those little things that we neglect. What coverage are they in when you're at the line of scrimmage? What does it look like they're morphing into so that I run the proper route? Because routes change depending on the coverage. And so, like, we learned all those little intricacies when I was in college. And those are the kind of things I want the guys that I work with now, but the guys that they should know, you should know what coverage they're. Even though it looks cover three, is it going to morph into a cover four, or is it going to morph into a cover two? What are they going to do, right, like at the snap of the ball? And you got to be prepared for it. So those kind of things are understanding what's happening. Now, those are probably my top things that I say truly affect whether you're good. And, you know, of course, if you're fast, you can get away with
it. Fast, man.
You can get away with a few of those things, not being a level 10. You can be a level 7, 8, 9 if you have 4, 4, 3, 4, 2, 4, 1 speed. You can get away with some of those things.
Real quick, before we go ahead, and there's another question I asked you. So there's a question that came from the audience here. How do you feel about players using social media today? Does it benefit them, or can it be a detriment? Is there a risk of engaging too much with fans? Overall, what are your thoughts on the new digital landscape athletes have to navigate?
You know, it's I think it's interesting. I think you still have to be reserved when it comes to that. I know guys really like letting people into their lives, which I think is cool, but not everybody's life is as conservative as others. And so anytime I feel like there are things that are outside the norm and people kind of question, then it becomes an issue. So I'm always concerned about guys that are on social media playing currently, letting them too close in to who they, what they do on a day-to-day basis. They can see certain things. I just don't think everything is to be seen on, on a social platform.
Yep, and you're saying that some of these athletes or your kids these days, they just share too much information.
I believe they share too much.
Yeah, sometimes it's a level of maturity too. I mean, you're not mature enough to know what you should and shouldn't share, so you just share everything. And
yes,
you know, Lord knows if this was around when I was a kid, I'd have ate it more than one time. So,
you know, thinking about that, like I look back and I look at like all these, like all the guys that came pre-social platform, like how would they have responded?
Yeah.
Like even in basketball, Magic and Michael, like everybody has a phone and can click them anytime. How would that change how they were out in the public back then. That it would have had a huge, you would have been way more reserved.
Oh, for sure.
Probably would have came out less. All those things would have happened, but they had the benefit of not having that, and they were more free because there was not paparazzi.
I agree. Imagine someone like Barkley being 20 years old with a social media platform.
Yes.
Not good.
He's on everybody. He would have went down the wrong world several times.
Exactly. Him or Gary Payton or something like, get off of there, man. Stop talking.
Right. All right. So, JJ, the question I asked you before the attribute or after the attributes is top five wide receivers of all time, in your opinion, in the NFL.
Top five, it goes Jerry, of course, a resounding one.
For sure.
I prefer T.O. at number two, only because
I agree with you.
T.O. catch deep ball, he catch everything underneath, and he blocks his ass off. And
exactly.
So he was complete, right?
Correct.
I think Randy Moss is right there at three. Then it gets tough for me because I like Larry Fitzgerald. I like
Calvin
Johnson. I like
Marvin Harrison.
There's like
Chris Carter, Marvin Harrison.
It kind of whatever you want. I used to grow up loving Lynn Swann and Cliff Branch and all those guys. But like after those three, like I'd say like Calvin Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald guys. Yep. Those are probably complete my top five right now as we speak.
But if you look at the contemporary players right now, I mean, it's all about a passing game right now. Right?
Yes.
The wide receivers are definitely being featured way more now than before. Yeah. So you have, in fantasy football, the guys that really stand out are Justin Jefferson and Jamar Chase. And Tyreek Hill. Those are probably the three best wide receivers that we see right now. But do you see them essentially, penetrating that top five, in your opinion?
I think with those last two that I mentioned, I think it's doable. But the consistency through and the longevity are going to be the key for those guys. I mean, the talent and skill level that they have and the catching ability and the ability to make huge plays is all there. Now it just depends on, like, Jerry played 20 years. T.O. played 16. I don't even know how many. Randy Moss was up there in that. And so was Larry Fitzgerald. So it's the longevity now. They're consistent. They've done it year to year. Now can they do it for another 5-8 years and be consistent to put them even in that category with those guys? If they can do that, then you have to question, okay, somebody might have to come out, somebody comes in. I'll tell you this, the most exciting receiver that I watched today is, of course, Tyreek Hill. I think he's just a spitfire of energy that makes things happen every time he touches the ball. So, like, I enjoy watching all the top receivers, but he was probably one of my favorites.
It's so hard to judge, though. You know, they don't get pushed off the line like they used to. They're not physical down the field. I mean, it's such a – Tyreek Hill is allowed to run as fast as he can, where, like, back in the day, I don't know if that would have been the case. They would have been shoving him down on the floor.
They would have shoved him down. They would have held him. They would have arm-locked him as on the inside. All those things that we don't have to deal with these days, we would have got. But here's the thing, like – I'm old school in that thought, but then I'm like, how old school can I truly be? Because the game has changed, right? And so I have to adjust my thinking with today's game. That's just like, I still like Ant-Man, but Steph Curry revolutionized the game. Yeah. And so you can't penalize him for that. You gotta appreciate that, right? Yeah. And so I do my best. Even at times, I have a hard time, but I do my best. I'm like, the game has changed, and so I appreciate watching it for what it is now. It's a passing league first and a running league second. And so, and really, the fact that they've taken the defense out, I feel sad for defensive players because in the aspect is they can't be who they truly are. Defensive players are some of the most aggressive guys you ever want to meet. And to take the aggression out of it, I mean, you're – they can't play at level 10. They have to play at a concerned level 7 for the games. And that's something that it's hard to do if you're playing at a full speed level. So I have empathy for those guys because they got to change the way they play the game or they grew up playing the game.
Yeah. So great. In your playing career, you played for three franchises. I'm sure you got to be friends with other players from other teams.
Yeah.
We'd love to, and even maybe former 49ers that come around, right? It'd be great to get your perspective as far as, you know, who are some of the more colorful personalities that you remember, right? Who are some of the guys who are like, man, this guy's hilarious, or this guy's crazy as hell, right? Or whatever, right? Some of the guys that really just stand out.
It's funny because I always hung out and gravitate to all the jokesters. So when we were at the 49ers, the guys that really jokesters were – And when I say joke, we're in the locker room, we're having fun and joking. That was kind of like Garrison Hurst, Terry Kirby.
Oh, yeah.
That was like Tim McDonald, Merton Hanks. Those guys were like, they were all in and having fun and enjoying it. But then you can come later that night and they're studying film till 10 o'clock at night, right? And they have families. And they were the toughest guys on the gridiron. So those guys really stand out. Garrison, for me, most part because I was on the offensive side of the ball. And Garrison always was somebody that when things were heavy, he lightened it. And when things were light, he would make it heavy by how intense he was. And so that's a guy that, you know, I'll remember a lot of the things that happened in the locker room and during the course of the game because he's just like, he had a knack for feeling the energy in the room. And if it was good, he kept it good. If it was bad, he changed it, right? And so, like, those are the guys you kind of need on the team.
Yeah.
But in addition, man, he's a tremendous running back.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. He was really good. Yeah. And, you know, I've seen him in person, you know, and he's not as big as you would think. He's not as big as you would think. I've seen him at the airport. I've run into a lot of 49ers over the years. And then Twan and I had an episode where we talked about people that we, you know, that were celebrities or people at high profile and who we rubbed elbows against and who we saw, right? And you know, one of the guys that Twan brought up, and I've seen this guy in person myself. And, you know, I'm a pretty big guy. You're huge, JJ. You're a huge guy. You're way taller than me. But we're both kind of broad-shouldered guys, right? But the guy, you know, when I saw this guy in person, man, I was like, oh, man, this guy looks crazy, and he's big as hell. And that was Charles Haley, man.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, that's the character.
I thought he was going to kill me.
Charles, oh, my gosh. You talk about a guy that had as much fun and talked as much mess, and come Sunday, going to have some sacks, going to have huge impact plays. Like, I don't – coming from San Diego to UCLA, we had one guy like that. It was Bruce Walker. God rest his soul. He could do anything. He'd joke. He'd have fun. But you come game day, Charles Haley would bring it. That's another character right there. Charles was one of the funniest guys in the locker room. And he always had stories for everybody. And honestly, I say he's certified crazy.
But
his mentality was like he's a true, like his mentality when he stepped on the field, like you just had to be around it to feel it. It was energy around this guy, and he made things happen though. But there's a lot of energy around that guy, and he just did walk out there and just make things happen. And he didn't really talk as much on the sidelines to us because we're offense defense, but in the locker room when he's messing with people and jokes with people and all those kind of things. Britt Jones was another one, by the way. He used to do the water. He used to put water on every door seal. So everybody opened the doors, water was falling on them.
He would
throw you in the steam room or put icy hot in certain things that were supposed to be cold, and you rub hot stuff on. Like, those are all the kind of things that happened in the locker room that were fun. Britt Jones was one of those guys, too. But
cool.
Charles was crazy. Yeah. Charles was a good crazy.
He just looks very menacing, man.
Yeah, no, yeah.
He looks menacing.
Yeah, really quick, we saw him at a bar, San Jose Live. I don't know if you remember that bar.
I do remember that.
So I saw him there sitting on a bar just real quick, and he had a Kansas City Chiefs polo on. Uh-huh. And I don't know why, you know. I go up to him, and I'm like, hey, Charles, are you going to play – you don't play for the Niners no more? And he looks at me and he goes, man – F the Niners, like that, like just boom. And I'm like, all right, dude, I'm out. I don't want no part of this. Yeah. I just walked away.
And he probably came into practice the next day and just trained. That's Charles, though. Charles, you never know what you're going to get with Charles, but you're going to get your best on Sunday because and practice every day.
Yep. Yeah, another guy that I've seen in person that was like Charles, like just menacing, like just a big dude. Just, and again, I'm a pretty big guy myself, but not as big as that. But man, I'm like a Bryant Young. That dude is huge. Huge.
Bryant Young.
BY. You know,
that is the ultimate professional guy right
there. Yep.
He is a professional. He comes in, he's there early, gets his work in the weight room and the film. And gets to practice, does practice. Afterwards, you can go in, you see him still studying. And, yeah, I mean, he spent 16 years. I think it was 16 years with the Niners before. If anybody, let me just put it like this. If you have something bad to say about Bryant, you're not a good person.
Yeah, there's something wrong with you.
A genuinely good dude, good hardworking, good family, good everything, faith. Just an all-around good dude.
Yeah. Right on, man. Right
so,
on.
JJ, if I'm not mistaken, you caught passes from Steve Young and Tom Brady, correct?
Yes, yes.
So let me ask you, I mean, not so much who's better, but with the other quarterback, can you tell, like, when a quarterback is good versus not? I mean, just from the receiving part of it, what are some of the aspects that you look at when you see that's a good quarterback? Like, the way he leads you, the velocity of the ball, the rotate, like what is it that you look from a quarterback to go, yeah, that's a good quarterback?
So just so I've had my quarterbacks that were starters when I had my three teams that I played were Steve Young when I first got there, Mark Brunell and Jack
Brunell, yes,
and Tom Brady. And so when I see the qualities that they all possess, all strong leaders, all vocal strong leaders, and that was something that you appreciate. The second thing that stands out is where they put the ball. A lot of times when you're playing high school, college, they throw you the ball. Well, when I got to the professional ranks, and I'm like, he threw it on my right or my left shoulder, and I turned right, and he goes, and I come back to the huddle, like, oh no, I threw it there because I'm telling you, your defender's on the other side. You need to, okay. Wow. So, like, it was like that pinpoint specific with those three guys. They were like, And that's something you pick up on. I'm sure nowadays they're picking up on it earlier in college. But at the professional ranks, I mean, if they threw me away, that's the way they wanted me to go because they saw the defense or a defender. And so it's next level. I mean, those guys all were next level. And for me to say who was best, they were just – the only difference was Brunell and Young were lefties.
Yeah.
And Tom was a righty. So the trajectory of the ball is something that I had to get used to.
Yeah.
With Steve Young, not with Brunell because I came from Steve Young. The trajectory on deep balls and on out routes is like from a lefty, if you're throwing deep ball on the left side, you have to save more room because the ball is going to fade out towards the sideline.
Okay.
And on the right side, it's going to fade in. So you have to stack them on the right side and know that the ball's coming in and the safety's still coming. So, like, things like that you just pick up as you play and where the ball's going to go when you run your out routes. Those things I've learned, but they've mastered that. The one thing they did and the one thing I appreciate, and I learned it with Steve first, what happens is Steve would come in and already know the game plan on Monday. And we had just played Sunday. And so he was telling us what he saw before we even started watching film. Tom was the same way. And you know how much of a film addict Tom is. Brunell was the same way. They could tell us what they saw, what they like, where they want us to be on our 3-step, 5-step, 7-step drops, all those kind of things. Information was already given on Monday. And Tuesday was our day off. So we could get it all Monday, digest it on Tuesday, and then be ready and understand what we wanted on Wednesday rather than learning game plan Wednesday.
So Tom wasn't quite Tom when you played with him. Did you know, like, he was going to be that good?
So it's funny because I playing with Tom, it was when we got there. Tom, what is it, TB12?
Yeah, his whole,
It was – that was in the process right then because what you noticed about Tom was that he was always – hydrated. He was always eating healthy foods. He didn't eat bad foods. And Tom was the type of guy that even, you know, most quarterbacks are kind of isolated. Tom was like, look, let's go out. So he would take the receivers out. We'd go out in the summer, and we would train in the morning, train in the middle of the day. We'd go out in the evening. He would go out, and, you know, we eat whatever. Tom would eat healthy. He did all those kind
of things. He did his TB12.
Yeah, he was already on that. It didn't have that name yet.
Yeah.
I think that was his second or maybe his third Super Bowl when I was there. So he was already on that path. It just morphed into when you start winning that many championships and the process he took and what it took him to go through, which was a tremendous amount of energy, effort, and dedication to get to what he got. You know, it turned into TB12, but it was that long before it just didn't have that name.
Yeah, very similar to the lifestyle that LeBron has chosen for himself.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, you know, I started this podcast when I introduced you with that video clip, which we really didn't talk too much about, the Davante Adams clip where he mentioned, you know, the memory of meeting you, right, when he was 7 years old. First of all, do you recall that event? And it's really hard for you to remember who's who, but do you recall the event that he's referring to? And then the second question to that is...
I only did one camp out there in Palo Alto. No specific camp. Because I remember we worked out that morning, and back then it was myself, Jerry, I don't think Ricky Waters was there, but like Sean Dawkins was there, Eddie George was there. And we had a lot of guys. We used to train hard. And I remember just going to the local 24 because I knew we had the camp and going to the camp afterwards. Now, did I know I probably met Davante and he told me his name, but I didn't remember.
Yeah.
But he was one of the guys that I had the receivers. And so he probably gravitated towards me. And I remember talking to all the receivers and opened up everything for questions for the kids. And I just wanted to be a help. I remember doing that specifically in Palo Alto because I only did that one camp there. Most of the camps I did were geared down towards the 49er facility or more up towards San Francisco. But that was the one that was set up, I want to say, by my trainer, if I believe correctly at the time, Raymond Ferris, was right there in Palo Alto for us to go to. And it was a tremendous camp.
Right. Well, you made an impact on the kid, and he's one of the good receivers that we have in today's game, right?
I mean, outstanding.
He's a really good route runner, good hands. I mean, he's good, right? And he's probably kind of on the twilight of his career now, right? But, you know, when he was in his prime, he was really, really good. So, but the question I want to ask you is, do you have a memory like Davante had about meeting you that you had in your life that maybe helped you kind of want to, you know, reach your goals and go into the NFL? Anything like that happened in your life? You know, anybody that you look at as a mentor, if you will?
You know, it was interesting growing up. It's funny, my name is JJ, and the one thing that I loved about the San Diego Chargers, even though I was a Charger fan, they had John Jefferson, and they called him
John Jefferson.
So that's that was kind of my thing growing up. He was a receiver, and I played running back all the way until the 11th grade. I was a running back. And so I used to wear his shoes, and I loved watching him. And then, you know, in addition to that, it was the running backs. But anyway, yeah, those were my childhood. My brother, I hung out with my brothers who are 9, 10, 11 years older than me. And so I spent a lot of time with them, and they were on the football field training, lifting weights. And so I was kind of duplicating what I saw them do and what I could do at a young age. And so they were my inspiration, my brothers. And then seeing like John Jefferson was one of the guys who I truly first met when I bought his shoe as an 8-year-old kid in San Diego.
Right. Well, cool, man. So we're already at an hour and 10 minutes, but this is a podcast that's basketball, right? So we know now that you are truly a basketball fan, right? That was your first love. So we definitely want to talk a little bit of basketball. We'll probably go maybe another, you know, 20 minutes. I don't know if your family's waiting for dinner for me right now.
Well, I already grilled. I was outside grilling earlier.
You're good. The salmon. But do you have 20 minutes, more minutes of maybe talk a little bit more about hoops? All right. So I know you've probably seen, you know, one or two of our shows in the past. But, you know, we talk about hoops. That's pretty much Twan and I's passion. You know, basketball is our first love. This is why we do this, is we both, you know, we love basketball, right?
Love.
So, you know, we we've been having this segment, you know, over the last couple of weeks that Twan and I had come up with this kind of, and I talked to you briefly about it, JJ, is that we wanted to come up with a way to objectively determine who are the best players of all time through a mathematical, analytical process, right? And not through a subjective process, right?
Right.
And, you know, one of the things that we did is the episode 48, actually it's probably our highest viewed episode to this date. But what we did is Twan and I had done a Mount Rushmore of, you know, who we thought prior to doing this mathematical process, who we thought were the Mount Rushmores for each position. You know, it would be, you know, point guard, shooting guard, all the way down the center, right? So we went through this process and, you know, Twan and I would argue like, no, it should be this guy. We had to settle who the top four were, right? So we went through this process of doing that. Then we came up with this analytical objective process and we came up with a bunch of categories, you know, namely most of their stats, right? And then also their accolades, right? Like, you know, MVP, defensive player of the year, NBA first team, second team, all that stuff, defensive first, second team, all that stuff, all stars, you know, all of that. We kind of figured out a formula and come up with this rating system. And what was interesting is that the names that we had come up with, you know, subjectively, were very different a lot of times than the ones that our system pumped out objectively, right? So what I wanted to, you know, we probably won't have time to go through all of that, but I know you when I brought this up to you, you're like, oh, that's kind of an interesting concept, right? Like what you guys are trying to do. And I don't know if it's ever been done, but you know, we have this evolving index. We're calling it Player Greatness Index is what we're calling it, right? And it's evolving, right? We give our rationale as to why we're weighing certain things, you know, for instance, MVP, right? We assigned 150 points for MVP. And the reason why we did that is because if you look at the history of the NBA, if you look at the number of teams that have been in the history of the NBA, there's been an average of 15 teams, right? Yeah. So 15 teams, then I go, okay, 10 people that play on the court at one time, I just said, okay, 15 times 10 is 150, right? That's how I came up with the process of coming up with that, right? Yeah. And then, you know, defensive player of the year, it's essentially half of the game. You know, it's not necessarily 75. We made 80. We just rounded up to 80, right? So just an idea. Just to give you the process of how we came about doing it. But I wanted to kind of paint this picture with you because the ensuing episodes, what we're doing right now is the ESPN had their 75-year team anniversary that they, you know, introduced a couple years ago. And they subjectively ranked these players from 1 through 75, or 1 through 76, because there was a tie of 75 and 76. We came up with our list, but we've been slowly rolling it out, right? Last week, we just came up with the 61 to 76 were the players that we went over. And we compared it against, you know, ESPN's list versus our list and just a lot of differences, man, right? But what I wanted to ask you is, who were some of the players that you gravitated to when you're in your youth, and who would you consider some of the best greats in your opinion? From the guys that you really liked.
You understand if I give you my top five, you're gonna be upset.
It's gonna be all Lakers. It's gonna be all Lakers, huh?
Well, a couple of them are Lakers. I think the best player to ever play the history of basketball is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
That's interesting because Swan and I have argued.
Never lost in high school, lost two games in college, and has all the accolades in the profession. Like, that's the best player in the history of the game, in my opinion. That's my first.
Yeah, if you watched our show early on when we were talking about it, I've said the same thing. It infuriates me. Or at least it did. Now we have this PGI index which we can talk about, but it infuriated me that everyone was like, Jordan or LeBron. I'm like, what about, and I'm not a Laker fan. By any stretch of the imagination, I'm not a Laker fan. But I'm like, how can you omit Kareem? Like, how can you leave him out of that conversation?
That's more everything than everybody.
Exactly.
Every level.
Exactly.
Here's the thing, though. What people tend to do is, like, Kareem's doesn't, It's your eyes. What is it? It looks too simple.
Correct.
Like, he had to master that, right? And the way Jordan looked, it's like, man, I can't duplicate that. So it's more amazing, right? And, it looks more artistic in the air. But I'm just going out with sheer facts and what has happened since he was in high school. Never lost championships. college. He got three championships. The only reason why he didn't fourth because he didn't let him play as a freshman. And his freshman team beat the team that won the championship from UCLA that year in the pickup game. And then he has six champions. Like, for me, there's no argument. But, like, what comes from that is, like, just – but I'm of course, I'm a UCLA and a Laker homer. Of course I am. But I still – that – those what I give you, good Kareem, are facts. Now, what's debatable is my number two. My number two is Magic Johnson.
Whoa, because yeah, Laker talk right now, man.
And if you need him to score, he'll score. But he doesn't need a score to make his team win. Yeah. And he gets everybody on the team involved. That's my number two.
All right.
I know. You know all our guys. You know, Eddie, all our guys are going to be like, well, how can you say that?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, my number three is LeBron, and then my number four would be Jordan.
My wow, so on your list, Jordan. That's four. Controversial, JJ.
That would be my top five. And Steph is my fifth, yes.
Yeah, okay. Steph Curry is legit, man. And I remember you and I and the guys we talked about back when, you know, Steph Curry was, you know, kind of emerging who he is before, you know. And we were saying, you know, at the time, we were asking, you know, we were kind of saying, we think that Steph's better than LeBron. You're the one like, come on, man. Wait, LeBron's way better than Steph. What are you talking about, right?
I said that for a few reasons. Like, the only reason why I really said that is because I think LeBron can rebound. He facilitates. He gets all his teammates involved. He makes the right play at the right time. And I think he's a better defender. But if you're talking strictly scoring, there's nobody a better scorer than Steph Curry. Nobody is, right?
Yeah.
So, but I was talking about all around stuff and. Yeah. And I get it, like, more of the focal point is on the offensive side of the ball, and that's okay. But, like, if I gave you my top five of all time, and that's what I think and that's what I feel right now.
Yeah. So we're not going to reveal our top five just yet because
we're
rolling this out slowly. But I can tell you that the guys that you mentioned, four of them were – actually, let's see. You had – no. Okay, Magic. Magic was not in the top 10, believe it or not.
Okay.
Steph Curry also was not in the top 10.
Oh, wow.
All right, but the other two were that you mentioned, right? Or the other three that you mentioned were. But I am not going to reveal it yet because we're going to reveal it in time, right? All right, so since you're a Laker fan, I got to ask you, what did you think about this trade with, you know, Luka, going to the Lakers and then Anthony Davis going to the Mavericks. What were your thoughts when that first happened? I mean, because our phones were blowing up that night when that happened.
Yeah. I was okay with it when I thought we were going to get the center from North Carolina in addition to Charlotte Hornets.
Mark Williams.
But when that went through, then I'm like, who's gonna be in the paint? Who's going to be in the paint? Because that's the one thing we had already, but we didn't have an addition to LeBron. I was like, we're getting Luka and a guy in the paint. I think that was the best thing for us. But then, he failed the physical.
Yes, exactly.
Didn't go through. And so, like, that for me was like, if that would have went through, I was like, that was it for me. But when that didn't go through, I was like, okay, they're going to make a good run, but I don't think they're ready.
Right. Okay, so what do you think about Luka?
I got a question.
Go ahead.
I had a real question. So putting my X-Files hat on here for a minute.
Okay.
So while you're in the NFL, did you ever notice the league do things that favored one team over another? Because I find it, this whole Luka thing, I find it very suspicious that they give up Luka and then they get the number one pick. Like, that seems so convenient to me. You know?
So it's not a coincidence. It's coincidentally not a coincidence.
Yes.
Because I'm like, come on, man. The likelihood, and they had one of the smallest percentages of getting the first round pick. That was, you know what? That's the equivalent to when Cleveland had a lower chance of having the first pick, and they got it with the year LeBron is coming out of.
Yep, like exactly.
Those kind of things. Come on. Yeah. You're not fooling. Everybody understands what it is, and you know you live with it, and you got to move on. I see the same thing.
Yeah, so you know, having been a long-suffering Warriors fan, we got blessed, and I'll say that word, we got blessed by landing Steph at the seventh pick.
Yes.
That changed the whole franchise around. So now we're viewed as one of the darlings of the league. But yeah. Before that, most people couldn't even tell you, where the hell does Golden State play? Where is that?
Like, where is Golden State?
Anything about me and Eddie talking to ourselves about, Run TMC and, all those stuff.
Yes.
And I look at franchises like the Washington Wizards, the Charlotte Hornets. Like, how are they supposed to move up in the world when you're jacking them up like this? I mean, just give them Cooper Flagg. That guy has the potential to turn a franchise around and make yet another darling in the league. But no, you got to go ahead and give them to the Dallas Mavericks.
You know what? I agree with you there. But when I look at the Warriors and specifically them, nobody thought that Steph was going to be what Steph is.
No, I agree with that.
I can tell you who knew, who didn't think that at all, was Minnesota.
The fact that they did their research and they were like, he can be they thought enough of him that they got rid of, I forget the high school player from Mississippi.
Monte Ellis.
They thought enough of him to get rid of him that he could be the number one, but I don't think they knew that he was going to be this. And the fact that he worked his tail off to become this,
yeah,
kudos for that, right? But some people, like then there's the people that you come in and the expectation is just so high. I don't think that expectation was that high on him. He became what he became because of what he put into it, right?
Yep.
But like when they give these other teams, like Cooper Flagg goes to the Mavericks, I truly believe that they should give some of the teams that have lesser of a chance of getting those picks. They don't do it anything like football, which I think they should. The teams that finish worst should get the first pick. It shouldn't be a lottery pick balls. And I understand they don't want teams throwing wins to get that, but I mean, it is what it is. I think that's the best way to do it for my eyes.
I agree with you. I mean, I agree you run the risk of teams tanking and all that, but you got to give the worst team the best player.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to.
Yeah.
Yep.
So go ahead, Eddie. You were so walking.
What I was just going to say for the audience, we are going to probably end this thing in about 9 minutes. So if there's some pressing questions that you have yet to ask and you want to ask JJ about his playing career, about his basketball, his life, whatever – please feel free to go ahead and type your comment, your question. We'll go ahead and post it because we definitely want to be cognizant of JJ's time here. He's been kind enough to give us a lot of time here. And I got to tell you, JJ, this has been a blast, man. I mean,
absolutely.
Twan and I, we started kind of doing this kind of podcast over almost a year ago, and it's evolved, right? But we have other jobs, right? This is not full time what we do. But because of that, we couldn't necessarily put maybe a lot of the preparation that we would like to do because it's just we have other things to do, right? So we kind of made it this kind of like more of a bar talk kind of, talk show kind of format, right? Just kind of, it's just a little bit more interactive, and people get to see our personalities. And I think people saw your personality big time today, man.
Yeah.
I mean, really, and that's why I wanted you to be here because, we know each other. It's different, right? I'm not going to ask you anything that you're uncomfortable with, right? I mean, I don't want to do that. We're friends, right? So, and I thought I think people here had a very good a sense of who you are as a person. I think it came across great. I thought it was a great time for us to have this conversation, and I really appreciate your time to spend with us, on here. So thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, JJ, I do want to add, I just found some of the stuff that you were saying fascinating, what shoulder they throw, like he's telling you something or your kind of top three attributes for a receiver. I'm curious, have you ever been approached by the league or a network to do any type of color or play-by-play? Is that something that would be of interest to you? Because I think you're pretty good at it.
So when I finished playing, I did Fox Sports West before it became FS1.
Okay.
I did color for the Mountain West, and I would call some Pac-10 and some high school games. I did color for that. I did an affiliate out in Modesto, California. We did me and my buddy called The Mouth. We did some radio. We did drive time radio, and then we did go in the city and did some radio in the city. So I've done color, and I've done radio right after I finished from 2003 to about 2010, right when my daughter was born and I started spending more time there, then it kind of shut down from there. But yeah, I did do it. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed all of that.
Right on. And by the way, I know you used to do like TV spots here and there, when you were kind of covering, you know, football games, you know, here kind of just after the, you know, after the whatever the Channel 5, I think it was one of those guys.
After minor games, I would do the
book. Yeah, exactly. Are you still doing any of that anymore?
No, I'm that's completely gone. I'm just coaching and chauffeuring.
Exactly. Yeah, great
chauffeur. As a Niner, any thoughts on Brock Purdy's contract or Deebo Samuel's getting traded or anything along those lines?
You know, Brock Purdy, like, all he's done is won when he's there. And so, like, I think if you give him the tools, I always felt like they needed one more tool at the receiver for them to be a complete receiving core, because they had somebody that can go in short routes, somebody that had the out routes. We had the slot receiver, but they never put any anybody on there that could really stretch the field for me. And they had a few, they just didn't get a lot of playing time, unfortunately. But I think if you had those three combined aspects, like, I feel like I played in an era where Jerry T.O. could stretch the field. I can catch anything short, mid-range. And T.O. or Jerry could play the slot. We could all do multiple things, so it made everything work. I just feel like they would have had if they would have used their deep threat more, I felt like we would have saw in the last few times they went to Super Bowl, we would have saw a victory. That's the one thing that I come away with. Like, we needed that one guy that stretches the field. They had the slot guy. They had the underneath guy that can make the big plays. They had all that. All the guys made big plays. I just feel like if you have that one guy that stretches the field and catches the ball 40, 50 yards down the field, I think that brings an additional element that is hard for defenses.
So we got one question here. So Linda Vissia, the coach he with a touch of the gray is looking sharp. Right on, Sean. Can the Pacers finally?
It's talking about Jay.
Yeah. Can the Pacers finally win it all, or is this the Thunder's championship to lose? Let me get your perspective there, JJ.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It's hard to go against somebody that's been so consistent the whole year. First of all, let me say that.
Yeah.
So OKC, they just been so consistent, and while the hardest part I think for everybody is it's OKC, right? Like, we're not used to seeing OKC in this position, so. You're reluctant to give them the credit, but they deserve. They work their tails off to be in this position, and so I'm the same way. I'm reluctant. I'm still like, well, I want this and this, but they work their tail off enough to say, look, we are that team, and I think they're ultimately good. In my eyes, they're going to be the team that takes it, because they have a lot of talent and they all play well together.
And they're deep. You know, it's interesting that the two deepest teams are realistically probably going to go to the finals.
Right? Yep,
you know, the Pacers and the Thunder are the two deepest teams. And you know, the Knicks ran out of gas, really. Yeah. I mean, Tom Thibodeau pretty much a six-man rotation. Yeah. And, you know, these guys are playing a lot of minutes, and they're just going to run out of gas, especially against a team that, you know, Twan and I have dubbed Run TMP. Not Run TMC, but Run TMP, right? Because of Tyrese, Miles, and Pascal. That's what we dubbed them. But these guys are running gun. They remind us of Run TMC. They're just a running gun team. So,
yeah, they're our adopted team this year. But you're right. From a skill set and a team set, the Thunder's the best team.
And they set a record. They set a record.
I can't argue.
I mean, 12.9 is ridiculous for net rating. That's ridiculous. Yeah. So.
They're a fantastic squad.
And I'm going to speak on behalf of all of us. Once we had kids, we all got grades. Once I had my son, I got grades right after that.
I shaved mine off because I was all grade, bro. I didn't want to reveal my age anymore. Yeah. Right? That's why I did that. So, but
Clearly some of our kids are
I'm in the Eddie boat where I shave enough off so it's only have a little bit. Right
exactly.
Now. If I let it go, it'll be the same.
Right.
I'm going to go Santa Claus mode here in a second.
Well, hey, JJ, we really appreciate your time. You know, thanks for taking the time to talk to us about all this stuff. And, you know, we definitely talked a lot of different things, mostly focused on your career from a football standpoint, your basketball, you know, career, what it could have been potentially. You know, we just talked about a lot of different topics, and I think the audience enjoyed it. We have quite a few people here that are listening in, and I wouldn't be surprised if this becomes one of our highest viewed shows once it releases tomorrow, you know, on YouTube and all the other different platforms that we have. So anyway, JJ, really appreciate your time. Thanks again for joining us. We're going to go ahead and, go ahead and sign off. But before we do, I'm just going to go ahead and do the things that we always do. I'm Eddie Aparicio. This is Anthony Toncaro. Of course, this is JJ Stokes, our special guest for our 50th episode. But we are also known as the Cisco Kids. You can find us at gremlinsmedia.com. You can also find us on any popular podcast platform you can think of, such as YouTube, Spotify, X, Facebook, whatever. You can just type in Gremlins Media and you can go ahead and find us. Anyway, we're here live every Wednesday. We're going to be here again next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Please tune in, and thanks for being here with us, and enjoy the rest of the week. Thanks, JJ.
Thank you.